The U.S. Supreme Court has concluded its current term. Yesterday, it handed down a decision on judicial ethics that could revolutionize campaigns for judicial office. The court also decided on school drug testing that could reshape after-school activities. And it upheld the constitutionality of a school voucher program. The state of Ohio had adopted the program to offer children in the failing Cleveland schools an alternative to public education. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The court's school voucher decision marks the first time that the justices have ruled that taxpayer money may subsidize religious education. In the past, the court has approved subsidies for non-religious activities at private schools, libraries, computers, sign language instructors, but this was the first time that the court gave the green light to public funds paying for religious instruction. Writing for the five-member court majority, Chief Justice William Rehnquist said that the Cleveland voucher program offered a true choice to parents, a choice that was not coerced by the state. The vouchers, worth up to $2,250 per child, are available to a wide variety of individuals based only on need, said Rehnquist. The fact that religious schools account for 96% of the student vouchers does not mean that the state is coercing parents into choosing religious education, he said, because parents in Cleveland have a variety of other choices available to them in the public school system, including charter and magnet schools. It did not matter, he said, that suburban school districts would not accept the vouchers. And lastly, he said, the incidental advancement of a religious mission is reasonably attributable to the individual parent, not the state. The parent uses the voucher at a religious school, and the state's role ends when it cuts a check for the parent. The court's ruling was a huge victory for voucher proponents like Kenneth Starr, the former Whitewater special prosecutor, who has defended voucher programs in the courts.
As of today, there's a very clear rule that if there is a system of true private choice, then it will be upheld.
President Bush, who's pushed hard for vouchers, also hailed the ruling, as did other proponents who noted that it removes the cloud of constitutional doubt that had overshadowed their drive for vouchers. Clint Bullock of the Institute for Justice predicted many other localities would soon be added to the voucher roster, though right now there are only three such programs in the nation, in Cleveland, Milwaukee, and a pilot program in Florida.
Both at the federal level and in the states, I would expect to see a flurry of school choice activity in the near future.
Voucher opponents didn't sugarcoat their loss, but said they would organize everywhere in the country against vouchers. The Reverend Barry Lynn is director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Our goal is to go state by state and to the Congress to make sure that this weed of school vouchers is not allowed to grow anywhere else.
So far, those opposing vouchers have been singularly successful in state legislatures and Congress, as Bob Chase, president of the National Education Association, observes.
There were voucher discussions in 26 states last year in the legislatures of 26 states, and not one state passed anything to do with vouchers.
In addition, in recent years, there have been 20 voter referenda on vouchers, and in each case, vouchers have been rejected, often by large majorities. Voucher opponents also made clear yesterday that if vouchers are adopted elsewhere, they will seek to make private schools accountable. The NEA's Bob Chase.
If public dollars are being spent, whether it be in public or private institutions, but they're public dollars, then there should be accountability.
What that means is that private schools might be required to do the same testing that public schools do now, to publish results in the same way, and to lose access to voucher money when test scores do not come up to specific standards. It could also mean that religious schools would be barred from discriminating on the basis of religion in teacher hiring. Yesterday's ruling does not entirely close the legal door to voucher opponents either. 37 states have state constitutions that require separation of church and state, and many state charters are stricter and more detailed than the federal constitution, as Jesse Choper of the University of California observes.
There's going to be a lot of action now. There's been some already writing, talking about, you know, the extent to which the seemingly stiffer state constitutional provisions really must be interpreted to bar this kind of aid.
Indeed, yesterday, voucher opponents in Florida said they are not abandoning their challenge to that state's pilot program because the challenge is based on the state constitution. Dissenting from yesterday's decision were Justices Souter, Stevens, Ginsburg, and Breyer. They called the ruling a potentially tragic mistake. Said Stevens, "Whenever we remove a brick from the wall that was designed to separate religion and government, we increase the risk of religious strife and weaken the foundation of our democracy." In another decision on schools yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that public schools can require students to be drug tested as a condition for participating in any extracurricular school activity, from the 4-H club to school band to French club. The ruling came in a case from Tecumseh, Oklahoma, where 505 youngsters were drug tested and 3 were found to be using drugs. But writing for the 5-member court majority, Justice Clarence Thomas said a demonstrated drug problem is not necessarily required to justify such a program because its intrusion is minimal. In any event, he said, given the nationwide epidemic of drug use, the Tecumseh drug testing policy was entirely reasonable to protect the health and safety of the students. Dissenting were Justices O'Connor, Stevens, Souter, and Ginsburg. Writing for the 4, Ginsburg said the testing program in Tecumseh was capricious and even perverse, since it targeted the student population least likely to abuse drugs, the students in after-school activities. And finally, yesterday, the High Court invalidated a typical state law barring judicial candidates from commenting on controversial issues that might come before them. Some 40 states pick some or all of their judges by election, and every one of them has a similar provision. Writing for the 5-member court majority, Justice Antonin Scalia said the ban on issue discussion is a ban on the kind of speech that is at the core of the First Amendment, speech about the views of candidates for office. Dissenting were Justices Ginsburg, Stevens, Souter, and Breyer. Writing for the 4, Ginsburg said, "I do not agree that an election is an election. Judicial campaign commitments undermine the very source of the judiciary's authority, public confidence in the integrity of those who don the robe." In recent years, social conservatives and business interests have been vocal in their desire to reshape the judiciary. In Alabama, the Christian Coalition even submitted a questionnaire to judicial candidates, and the Chamber of Commerce has poured money into judicial campaigns across the country. Steve Bocat is general counsel for the chamber.
These people are being selected to make significant decisions that impact our daily lives and impact certainly American business across the country. And the public and the business community ought to have the right to know what they stand for when we go to the election booth.
Most judges and many lawyers do not like the trend, as Indiana Chief Justice Shepard put it in an interview yesterday.
I think the court's opinion will accelerate the trend of importing into the judiciary the kinds of interest group politics and large money campaign techniques that have so far mostly characterized congressional and legislative elections.
Shepard, a Republican, echoed the position of the National Association of Chief Justices in saying that he did not think the result of yesterday's ruling would be a very attractive one for those who love justice. But Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, in a concurring opinion, seemed to foresee that issue. If the states have problems guaranteeing judicial impartiality because of this ruling, the answer is simple and, she said, desirable. Judges should be appointed, not elected. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.